Welcome back, everybody, to a new episode of Kicking with Keeler here on Full Press Radio, episode number 93. Hope you're enjoying your week. Hope you enjoyed the kickoff to the NFL season last night. I'm your host, Ricky Keeler. It is a Football Friday. We're going to try to bring these back each and every Friday, where we're going to preview the week to come in the NFL, the week to come to college football. We'll do a couple other things as well, and then either Monday or Tuesday, we will wrap up the week's action, takeaways, things like that. Kind of give you two shows each week during the football season because there's so many sports to get into. We're going to try to dive into multiple sports each week. Obviously, you're going to get my football picks coming up, word association. That's always a great segment. We're going to talk about the week in college football. Austin Hansen, the sports editor from the Daily Iowan, will join me for Student Section Showdown as we preview Iowa-Iowa State Saturday afternoon on ABC. And we're going to end the show this week with a solemn reminder of what happened 20 years ago on Saturday. Me being in New York, considering what game is going to be played Saturday night, and I still feel, and we'll talk about it a little bit later toward the end of the show, the game will be overshadowed by what happens. I think you will not I don't know if you'll remember what will happen whatever in the game, because it's a big game for both teams, but we will get into that a little bit later. I want to remind you, you can tweet us on Twitter at Rickinator555, at R-A-C-K-L-I, Nader like a Terminator, and 3 5s. You can follow us on Twitter at FP underscore coverage, at Full Press Radio. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. If you get your podcast, just search Kicking with Keeler. Chances are you will find the show. Feel free to give a rating to what you like, what you don't like. Feel free always to send your word associations as well for the week. RickJKeeler at gmail.com is the email you'd also use. And be sure to download the Full Press Coverage app on your iOS or Android device. It is free. All of our articles, podcasts, live shows, anything that you're looking for, chances are you'll find it. If you want to listen to the show again before Sunday's action or Saturday's action, if you're a college football fan, you could always do so. The most recent episodes of every podcast are on the Full Press Coverage app. So we thank you for downloading that as well. So the NFL season gets underway, and a fun opening night game, to say the least. An instant classic. I think this game was closer than a lot of people thought it was going to be. The Buccaneers beating the Cowboys 31-29. Tampa gets that banner celebration and gets a win in the process. And as I watched this game and I thought about it afterwards, I thought we learned more about the Cowboys than we learned about the Bucs. I think everybody knows what the Bucs are. Obviously, they're one of the favorites, if not the favorite, to win the Super Bowl for a second straight year. We know what Tom Brady is, and he had another strong game, 32 of 50 for 379, 4 touchdowns. Did have 2 picks, but you consider one was on a drop screen by Leonard Fournette, and the other was a Hail Mary before the end of the first half. You kind of really want to wish you could kind of just take those interceptions away. Nevertheless, a really good game from Tom Brady. You've seen Antonio Brown emerge in this offense, 5 catches, 121 yards, and a touchdown on 7 targets. So you're seeing Antonio Brown become more involved. Chris Godwin gets 9 catches for 105 yards and a touchdown. Gronk, 8 catches for 90 yards and 2 touchdowns. You saw Leonard Fournette get 7 targets. So Tom Brady is going to move this ball around. Mike Evans, who had a down game, if you're a fantasy owner of Mike Evans, still had 6 targets in the game. Just only 3 catches, but Brady's going to maneuver this around, and I think you clearly also saw in the ground game, as right now Leonard Fournette's the lead back there. He had 9 of the 14 overall carries the Buccaneers had, 13 if you include the Antonio Brown jet sweep they tried to run. But when I look at this game, Tampa Bay kept letting Dallas back in it. You go to the second quarter, and Tampa Bay's got a 14-7 lead. Greg Zuerlein misses a chip shot field goal. One of 2 missed field goals on the night. Next play, Ronald Jones fumbles. Immediately gets Dallas right back in the game, and Dak throws a touchdown to Cooper. Makes it 14-13 because Zuerlein misses the extra point. The next play, that's where the drop screen leads to the interception. Dallas turns it into 3 points. All of a sudden, 16-14. Although the Buccaneers are able to score before the end of the half on the Brady touchdown to Antonio Brown, then Zuerlein misses a 60-yarder. Then you get to 28-26. Tampa's got the ball about 11 minutes to go. They drive the ball down inside the Dallas 13. Brady throws a great pass to Chris Godwin. And I don't know if Godwin's trying to stretch for the end zone or trying to do fancy moves to get into the end zone, but he ends up fumbling. A great play by KZ to knock the ball out. Dallas recovers, drives down the field, kicks a field goal. So Tampa gifted points to the Cowboys. The problem for Dallas in this game was when they got in the red zone, they didn't really turn it into touchdowns as much as they did field goals. And I was kind of wondering why Mike McCarthy, when he's seeing Zuerlein is struggling to make field goals, although to Zuerlein's credit, he did make a 48-yarder to give him the lead with 90 seconds left. So I will give him that much. But when you're struggling to make field goals, you got to go for it. Because in order to beat Tom Brady, beat Patrick Mahomes, beat Aaron Rodgers, you've got to throw touchdowns. You can't kick field goals and worry about just getting points on the board. At some point, you got to be aggressive and go for it. In worst case, if you miss it, Tampa's got the ball at the 3-yard line. Got to take some chances. And that's where I think if there is any criticism from Mike McCarthy, it would be that. As Tampa, essentially, as I said, tried to gift the game to the Cowboys. And I'll give Dallas credit. I'll give Dak Prescott credit. Out his top offensive lineman and Zach Martin due to COVID. Goes 42 for 58, 403 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 pick, only gets sacked once. Now, to be fair, Tom Brady wasn't sacked at all, so this was a game where if you like pass rush, you didn't get it. And I was shocked. And maybe I didn't think of this ahead of time, as a lot of people did after the game. Shocked Dak threw the ball 58 times. Coming off the lat strain this summer, the ankle during the offseason, the rehab it took to get there, which is impressive, but Dak's able to play this well coming off of that injury. But without Martin, Dallas can't really run the football. You saw it. Every time they tried to run it with Ezekiel Elliott, there was nothing there. His best run was for 13 yards. He had 11 carries for 33 yards in the overall game. Tony Pollard barely got any carries. And Dallas strictly had to turn their short passing game into a run game. You saw a lot of screens. You saw a lot of short dump-off passes. You saw Dak even going down the field where CeeDee Lamb had a big drop that led to an interception. And CeeDee Lamb dropped a couple of easy ones early in the game. You saw Amari Cooper break out, 13 catches for 139 yards, 2 touchdowns. Proven to be the number one, but you're seeing Cooper, Lamb, 6 catches for Dalton Schultz. Michael Gallup before leading with the ankle at 4 catches. So like Brady, Prescott's moving the ball around, trying to get different players involved, using the advantage of having Cooper or Lamb in the slot, because Tampa's without Sean Murphy Bunting, who left that game with an elbow injury. They had another safety leave during the game as well. So the Buccaneers, if there is a weakness to this team, it is in the secondary. If they can't get pressure on the quarterback, you can connect on downfield passes. And we saw it yesterday. Is it something that can derail them from Super Bowl? I'm not so sure. But if you're looking for a weakness on a team that brought everybody back from a year ago, it's probably in the secondary. And good offenses will exploit that and turn these into high-scoring games, just like the Cowboys did. And when we did our NFC predictions, I had Dallas as a playoff team in the NFC. I think they're the 7th seed because of how good this offense is. The key is going to be their defense. Their defense can force turnovers. We saw the 2 picks. We saw the fumbles recoveries. But you got to get pressure on the quarterback. And it's easier said than done going up against the GOAT and Tom Brady. And I think we all knew when Dallas took the 1-point lead with about a minute 24 left, the Buccaneers are getting their field goal range. Whether you believe Chris Godwin should have been called for offensive pass interference or not on that final drive, that was just a great throw by Brady. A fantastic throw. To set up Ryan Succop for the 36-yarder that won the game. So if you're Tampa, you breathe a sigh of relief. You got through the opening game. You're feeling good about yourself. And you can move on to the mini-bye, which I read an article that Bruce Arians isn't a huge fan of the mini-bye because of COVID, which I would understand. If you're Dallas, there's no such thing as moral victories, but you've got to feel good too. To see your quarterback play as well as he did, see your defense force turnovers, Dan Quinn's defenses are known to do that, to see the receiving core do pretty well. You saw the offense that you saw at the beginning of last season, although Dallas was coming from behind a lot. The Cowboys really had great chances to win this game, and that would blame the kicker, Greg Zuerlein, because he missed a huge field goal. And there was another play in this game that cost the Buccaneers, that cost the Cowboys as well. It was a 3rd and 6. Prescott threw a short pass to Elliott. That would have been 4th down anyway, but it was a holding on Connor Williams that moved the ball back to the Tampa Bay 40. Prescott did make the yards back up with the 10-yard throw to Cooper to get the field goal, but imagine if Dallas doesn't make a field goal there. I mean, the Cowboys had some really bad holding penalties that negated some big plays. And to be fair, this was a game that if you don't like flags, you hated this game. 8 penalties for Dallas for 55 yards. Tampa had 11 penalties for 106 yards. And this is the norm. When you play early in the season, even though they're back to 3 preseason games, at least there's preseason games this year, you're going to get penalties. You're going to get turnovers. That's the way this game is. But Dallas had a good blueprint. Even though they didn't really run the football, they were 9 for 17 on third down. That's a good percentage. A little over 50%. You'll take it. Went about 6 yards a play. You'll take it. But 1 out of 4 in the red zone, Tampa's 3 for 5 because Rob Gronkowski's just really dominant in the red zone. Those red zone possessions were going to cost you games. And I think Dallas's inability to score in the red zone led to a loss because the Cowboys had this game. Now they're 0-1, but to Al Michaels' point from last night, they don't play a team that made the playoffs last year until week 11 now. That doesn't mean their schedule isn't hard by any means. They still have to play the Chargers next week on the road. It's going to be a tough game. They go to New England in a few weeks. They go to Minnesota. So there are tougher-ish games. I mean, Denver at home with Denver's defense, that could be interesting. But Dallas, if you look at that schedule from that perspective, is in a good position. They can work on figuring out the defense. They can work on figuring out how to get Ezekiel Elliott going on the ground game because they don't think Zeke's done. I think he still has plenty of miles left in the tank. If you watch Hard Knocks, he talked about how patient he is as a runner. Well, you saw last night, even though he was patient, the Buccaneers had linebackers ready to plug in those holes to hold in the short yardage gains. So they kind of, maybe the Bucs watched Hard Knocks and realized how Zeke runs the football. I'm not entirely sure. But overall, good things from Dallas. And good things from Tampa. I think you got a really high quality football game for an opener that you don't get very often. We're used to seeing teams get dominated in the opener. We're not used to seeing upsets. And we haven't really seen upsets at an opener in a long time. I remember Dallas upsetting the Giants when the Giants had their title a few years back. But there's not usually the Super Bowl champion usually finds a way to dominate at home in their opening night game. And I think when people saw the spread for Tampa go to 9.5, you thought this, okay, no, Dallas is out their top offensive lineman, the Bucs should roll. And it looked for a while they were going to. And Dallas found a way to get Tampa to make mistakes. And you saw Brady after the game say, it's not a perfect game, you got to go back and correct it, got to go back to work. And he's right. Tampa's got to figure out their ground game, they got to figure out how not to turn the football over. Because that's how you let teams back in game. We can talk about 17-0 with the Bucs all you want. I'm not going to go there yet. And this is from somebody that after 3 weeks in 07 thought the Patriots were going to go undefeated. I can't go there yet until I see this Buccaneer team who still has a lot of tough games on their schedule, particularly on the road. I don't know if they're going to get there, but how you don't get there is by making mistakes. You saw it yesterday. The Bucs can beat themselves. And it's really important. And I was very impressed with Brady in another factor. He did a good job hanging on to the ball because there was a couple times when Dallas got pressure. There was one play where the defender got to Brady's arm and he somehow hung on to the ball. I don't know how because I think any other quarterback would have fumbled. That's the GOAT for you. Just finds ways to get it done. So it wrapped up the opener, but we'll take a quick break. We will come back, and we will look ahead to the rest of Week 1. It is word association time here on Kicking It with Keeler, and we will play our world-famous game after this. Getting set for Week 1 word association here on Kicking with Keeler. Ricky Keeler back with you. Want to remind you, you can check out our weekday radio lineup every weekday here on the network. FPC Radio Live with Ian Glendon, who is the founder of the site, and John Sapichetti, who's been filling in for Mike Debate. You can catch that show every weekday from 9 to 10 a.m. Usually it's on live on Twitter or YouTube and things like that, but you can catch the show every weekday on fullpresscoverage.com. And then Dylan and Ross Save Sports are on every Monday afternoon, so you have that show to watch as well. And then from 12 to 2, we have the Sports Radio America Network on. So there's 3 shows we have for you, so be sure to check out those live shows addition to the podcast that we do. If you see something that we don't have on the website that you would like to contribute to, just go to fullpresscoverage.com and apply today. So, as we usually do with every football preview show, I start off with the five games that I'm really looking forward to watching. Usually when I go through the schedule, that doesn't mean they're the five best games. It's just five games that I'm going to look forward to. And then we'll play word association right after that. So, as I'm going through this list of games, number five on the list is probably Chargers versus Washington. I'm really a big fan of this game because I want to see the Chargers coming off of a promising year ago with Justin Herbert. Austin Eckler's banged up with a hamstring. Does he give it a go? And Washington without Curtis Samuel, who was just put on short-term IR on Friday with the groin injury. I mean, does Diami Brown step up in the receiving game to help Terry McLaurin? What does Ryan Fitzpatrick look like? Does Antonio Gibson in his second year take that next step? I mean, this is a football team I'm high on, literally, because they're the football team. But I'm high on them. I picked them to win the NFC. So, obviously, this is a big game. I think you want to make a statement. They're a one-point favorite, so Vegas thinks it's an even game. I think you had a really close contest. And how does Justin Herbert handle that pass rush? Really good test for the opener. So, that, to me, is number five. Number four, I am going to go to New England. Dolphins and the Patriots at 4:25 on CBS. And why this game is important, I've talked about it all offseason. If you believe Miami and New England are contenders for one of those last two playoff spots, because Buffalo's the favorite to win the AFC East. I mean, I would be shocked if anybody but Buffalo won it. But if you believe these two teams are in the line for those last playoff spots, then this is a huge head-to-head game. Remember, these two teams do not play each other again until the final week of the season. January 9th. So these two teams start the season against each other. They end the season against each other. So this win could go a long way in determining head-to-head tiebreakers, anything that could happen during the course of the year. You get Mac Jones' debut against Tua Tagovailoa, so the Battle of Alabama quarterbacks. Tua was not named a captain. How does he react to that? Can the Patriots defense that did kind of give Tua an ugly stat line last year when they played him in December, yet the Dolphins won the game with their defense? I mean, how does Mac Jones look in his first game? How does this Patriot team that added so many weapons, maybe not receiving weapons, they added Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith, but guys on defense like Matthew Judon, he's going to play a big factor. Miami is able to debut Jalen Waddle. How does he play an impact both on special teams and in the passing game? This is a big AFC East game. It's going to go overshadowed because it's not the national game. Browns Chiefs is, and we're going to get into that. But this is a sneaky good regional game at 4:30 on CBS on Sunday. 4:25 to be exact. Number three, I'm going to go to Tennessee for the Cardinals at the Titans. It's going to be a high-scoring football game because both these teams have some defensive questions, particularly in the secondary. Arizona lost Patrick Peterson. Malcolm Butler retired. I know they have Buda Baker as a safety, but I think Arizona's going to be the defense that struggles to defend the deep pass, and Tennessee, of course, has A.J. Brown and Julio Jones. The Titans' defense is not much better. We'll see if they've improved from a year ago, but this is a game I think you're going to get a lot of points. So that, to me, is number three. I'm looking forward to this contest. Number two, I'm actually going to go to Buffalo. Steelers and Bills. Because this is a game that was low scoring the last time these two teams played in the regular season. And you have a Bills team looking to meet their expectation. They made it to the AFC Championship game a year ago. Can Josh Allen continue to become that guy a lot of people think will be the MVP this season? Do they establish a running game? We'll see. And for Pittsburgh, they want to debut their running game. They need to establish a balanced attack, so Najee Harris will be under the microscope. Is Ben Roethlisberger actually done? Or are the Steelers the team that started 11-0 last year? Which Pittsburgh Steelers team will show up for this game? But a lot of people starting to buy into Pittsburgh at least to cover the number, which I think Buffalo right now, as we do the show, favored by 6.5. How does Pittsburgh handle this game? And I think we're getting, again, this could be a situation we find out more about the Steelers than we find out about the Bills. So that's why this is number two. And number one is another 4:25 game on CBS. I think the game of the week. It's the Browns and the Chiefs. Rematch of last year's AFC divisional round. Chiefs hung on to win despite Patrick Mahomes leaving the game due to an injury. Cleveland had its own opportunities in the red zone. They could not convert. And if a lot of people are starting to buy the Browns, is if you don't pick the Chiefs, a lot of people are picking Cleveland. And you look around the league, especially with the Ravens' injuries at the running back position, no Gus Edwards, no J.K. Dobbins. In the secondary, no Marcus Peters. I mean, if you believe the Ravens all of a sudden don't have that good mojo going with all these injuries, you're going to probably pick Cleveland to win the AFC North, which would set the Browns up even better for potential. This could be a rematch game in the AFC Championship this year. Would not surprise anybody. So how does Baker Mayfield handle going into Arrowhead again? Can the Browns keep this game close? I think if Cleveland keeps it close, they're going to be viewed for real as opposed to if the Chiefs just go in and blow their doors off. Now, they've revamped their offensive line. I think you'll get more of a ground game with Hilaire than you did a year ago. So that's what makes this game number one. Now, there were other games on that I considered. Jets-Panthers was one, because I think the intrigue of the quarterbacks in that one is fun. And I also thought about Seattle-Indianapolis, Carson Wentz's Colts debut. And the other one I thought of was Packers-Saints was one I considered, and Broncos-Giants I considered. So there are at least 8 to 9 games I like. And when we get into the all-famous flip-the-channel game of the week, there wasn't a lot of great consideration for that. Because I could view most of these games as there's something I want to at least tune into it standalone to see what's going on and not wait for it to hop on my red zone feed. So here we go. Word Association Week 1. Now, for those who are just joining the show this year, and if you are, welcome. This is how we play Word Association. Basically, I want you to picture it like you're at a psychiatrist's office. And the psychiatrist is showing you a picture of an ink blot, and they ask you to give the first word or phrase that pops in your head about that ink blot or picture, whatever it is. Well, we do that for football games. It doesn't have to be one word. It could be a couple of words. We're very loose with that on the show. And sometimes we have guests on throughout the season to play this game as well. And one of the games that we do will be your Flip the Channel Game of the Week. Now, what does that mean? The Flip the Channel Game of the Week is a game that you're probably not going to watch, and the only moments you'll see of it are when you're watching Red Zone, you need your players in fantasy to score points for you. Like, you'll never actually tune in to actually watch the pre-scoring moments in the game. Like, that's what a Flip Your Channel. I actually put it on Twitter, @RickNader555, and I'll do it earlier next week. We didn't get as many votes this week, but I'm hoping as the season goes on through these 18 weeks, we will get a little bit more of action involved in that. So remember, go to my Twitter account, @RickNader555. I'll probably put it out Tuesday or Wednesday this coming week. Your Flip the Channel Game of the Week for Week 2. Keep that in mind. And I'll reveal my pick for Flip the Channel and then your pick for Flip the Channel as well. So here we go. Week 1, and we're going to start in Atlanta, where the Eagles take on the Falcons. This was actually the viewer's choice for Flip the Channel Game of the Week. Keep saying Flip Your Channel. Flip the Channel Game of the Week. I don't disagree. I can see why. It was one of the three choices I put up there. But my word for this is unknown. I don't think we know what the Eagles' offense is going to look like. I mean, we saw Jalen Hurts play well toward the end of last season up until Week 17. The Falcons with Arthur Smith as the head coach. What is Kyle Pitts' role in the offense? Does Calvin Ridley take the next step? Can Mike Davis handle being a number one back? There's a lot of unknowns in this game, and I think it could create for entertainment, which is why I was hesitant to make this my Flip the Channel Game of the Week, because I do believe there could be points scored in this game, so which would make for a little bit of entertainment. But Eagles-Falcons, the word for me is unknown. Let's go back to Buffalo. Steelers at the Bills. And my words for this are early season test. And that's for both these teams. Pittsburgh needs a test because they need to see where they stack up. Especially, how do they look now with more of a balanced attack? I think Harris is definitely going to improve that ground game, even though they've got two rookie offensive linemen. For the Bills, they need a test of how do they handle being the team everybody's chasing as opposed to being the chasers. So early season test for both these teams. Now, Vikings at Bengals is our next game. And my word for this is optimism, because I think there's optimism in Cincinnati with Joe Burrow. Makes his return to the starting lineup. I think fans are going to be excited to see him play. What does Ja'Marr Chase look like with his old college quarterback? And for Minnesota, I think you're going to get excitement in terms of points with Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen, Dalvin Cook. Vikings are going to score points. This is going to be a fun game, especially since Eli Apple's the number one corner in Cincinnati. So this one, if you like points, Vikings-Bengals will be a good one for you to watch. So optimism, I think, for Cincinnati is the key word here. Niners at the Lions. Now, this game is the Flip the Channel game of the week, and here's my reason why. I actually think Detroit at times is going to look okay with Jared Goff, because I'm actually not a Jared Goff hater, as a lot of people are. But Jimmy Garoppolo is the quarterback. It's not Trey Lance. Trey Lance is still recovering from the bone chip issue with his finger. So with that being the case, I don't think there's a lot of excitement for Jimmy Garoppolo, quarterback. He's a good player, but to me, there would be more intrigue to this game if Trey Lance was healthy and how we'd see if they use both quarterbacks. So this game is kind of dull. The Niners should roll. They're healthy on defense. The Lions can be without one of their best offensive linemen. I don't see how the Lions win this game. So to me, this is the Flip the Channel game of the week, San Francisco and Detroit. To Tennessee, with the Cardinals at the Titans. And my word for this is prove it for both of these teams. For Arizona, I mean, they're in a tough division. They're going on the road. But Kyler Murray's got to take that next step. He's got to be able to get Arizona to the postseason. They were close last year. You could argue if Kyler Murray did not get hurt toward the end of the season, they would be in the playoffs. Now, they're a little bit better. They got J.J. Watt in their pass rush. But Arizona's got to take another step, and so does Tennessee. I mean, Tennessee winning the AFC South with the way it's constructed isn't exactly an accomplishment. Tennessee's got to get to that, back to the AFC Championship like they did 2 years ago, or get on a deep playoff run. So both these teams in a prove-it mode, which I think will make for a lot of fun. To Indianapolis, Seahawks at the Colts. And my word for this is change of scenery for Carson Wentz. I'm shocked he's even going to play in this game. That speaks to the good recovery he's been on off of his injury. But no T.Y. Hilton, so we'll see what Michael Pittman and Paris Campbell can do. And for Seattle, now, I did a draft with my sister, my brother, and my family. We have Russell Wilson, Chris Carson, and DK Metcalf. So we're going to be rooting for the Seahawks a lot in this game, I'm sure. But Seattle going out to the Midwest, early kickoff time. Indianapolis is a team that can play defense. I think this game is actually going to be very low scoring. I do believe this is a game that, if it's 20-17, I'm not going to be surprised. Like, that's the kind of smash-mouth football I think this game could be. So, change of scenery is my word here. Chargers at Washington, the game we talked about a little bit earlier. And my words for this is which side prevails, LA's offense or Washington's defense? Because it's going to be a contrast in styles. And usually good defense beats good offense, but which side happens here will be, I think, a lot of fun to watch, as we talked about. Jets at the Panthers. Two easy ones here. Revenge game. Sam Darnold trying to get revenge on the Jets. He's got better weapons than he's ever had with New York, with DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, Terrence Marshall, Christian McCaffrey in Carolina. So I'm not shocked the Panthers win. I think the Jets can keep it close, though. I know Jameson Crowder's out due to COVID. But Elijah Moore is a promising rookie. They've got Corey Davis, who had a good rapport with Zach Wilson this preseason. I'm excited to see what Wilson can do. He looked pretty good in the preseason. I would not be shocked if the Jets win in and win this game. The problem I think they're going to have is Carolina has too many weapons downfield, and the Jets secondary, nothing really to write home about. So that's where I think Robert Saleh, I think it's going to be the back of the defense going to be the big problem here. And there's going to be too many big plays from Carolina. To Houston, the Jaguars at the Texans, and my words are closer than you think. I would not be shocked if the Texans won this game. I think Jacksonville wins it. I think Trevor Lawrence has enough playmakers to get it done in his opener. It's a good way to get it done in your opener. But the Texans, remember, Tyrod Taylor can win games at the next level. He can win games in the NFL. He's a guy that he's a good backup to have in the room. And you could see Houston coming out with the us-against-the-world mentality for a game or two before their talent actually shows up. Because I do think the Texans can get closer to 3 or 4 wins than people think. Because I think there will be teams that look down on them. And for Jacksonville, this is the game they're expected to win. How do they handle that? And divisional games are always tricky. So even though it is a close game in Vegas, Jacksonville's favored by 3, I think it's going to be about that line. I think it's going to be a really close and sneaky, entertaining game. Because you'd think this would be the flip the channel game of the week. It's not because of Trevor Lawrence, but it's not also because I think this game is going to be actually pretty close. Let's go to the late games. Let's do the games we haven't talked about already. Let's go to New York. Broncos at the Giants. And my words are contender or pretender, and that goes for both of these teams. Denver with Teddy Bridgewater at quarterback. They have Cortland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, Noah Fant. They've got the weapons and the defense, so people are going to be looking for Vic Fangio Broncos to take that next leap in getting into playoff contention after a rough year last season. And for the Giants, Saquon Barkley's coming back. Sounds like he's going to play, even though it might be limited, but there's a lot to prove for Daniel Jones. The Giants have the offensive players around him. Patrick Graham has a good defense. They made moves this offseason. Giants are in a winnable division. This is a game at home. I know they're underdogs, but this is a game I think the Giants should win. You want to be taken as a contender, particularly in the NFC East. Start off with a win. So big game for both those squads at MetLife Stadium. To New Orleans. Well, actually to Jacksonville, because the Packers are playing the Saints in Jacksonville. Saints can't play in New Orleans due to the devastation on Hurricane Ida. So our thoughts go out to all those affected by Hurricane Ida. And my word for this is farewell tour. This is the start of Aaron Rodgers' farewell tour. I think he's going to have a fantastic season and then leave Green Bay at the end of the year. Packers, I think, they're getting talked about. They're like second in line with Tampa. But with Jameis Winston, a quarterback for New Orleans, I think there are going to be turnovers. I think there's going to be mistakes. Maybe not as much as Jameis used to have. But with the Saints having no Michael Thomas, I don't know how they keep up with the Packers. I think they're going to hold their own for a little bit, but Green Bay should win this game. To Kansas City for the Browns and the Chiefs. And this one is potential rematch. We talked about it earlier. I think this could be an AFC Championship preview. I have this as my AFC Championship game. I think what's going to be interesting for the Browns is what strategy they go with. They try to run the ball with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt and control the clock, or do they try to throw the ball downfield and try to keep up with the Chiefs? They could go either way. Stefanski's got that good method rolling we saw last year, but for the Chiefs, I like, again, bringing in Joe Tooney for that offensive line. I think they're going to be more balanced. I don't think Mahomes is going to have to throw the ball 55 times like he did a year ago. There's going to be, I think, some form of balance in the Chief offense is going to help him out. In New England, the Dolphins at the Patriots, and my word for this is Roll Tide. It's a battle of Alabama quarterbacks. And again, I've mentioned time and time again how big this game is for both of these teams. I think Will Fuller being out is a big deal for the Dolphins. He's suspended for this game. They don't have their other tight end, Adam Shaheen, due to COVID. Their left tackle is out due to COVID. And I think the Patriots are going to win this game with defense. I think their defense is going to make some big plays. I know Jalen Mills is banged up in the at cornerback, no Stephon Gilmore. But New England can bring pressure. Their front seven is one of the better ones in the league. I think it's going to bother Tua to a degree. I think New England's run game, which is really good in week one a year ago against Miami. I think Damian Harris is going to have a huge season. We'll see how much J.J. Taylor and Ramondre Stevenson get used in this game. But I think New England wins it. I think they win it late. I think this is going to be a really fun, close, low-scoring ball game, but I like the Patriots. To Sunday Night Football, the Bears at the Rams. First game in front of fans at SoFi Stadium. Rams fans should be excited. Matthew Stafford makes his debut. And my word for this is House of Pain, as in there's going to be a lot of pain that Andy Dalton feels after being sacked by Aaron Donald a bunch of times. I don't give the Bears much of a chance at all in this game. Maybe they keep it close for a little bit, but the Rams, they're too good on defense. Matthew Stafford's going to make plays. I don't see that. They're just going to be waiting for Matt Nagy after the game to say Justin Fields is the quarterback next week. This is going to be a rough one for Sunday Night Football. So NBC got its good game Thursday. I don't think they're getting one here. And Monday Night Football, Ravens at the Raiders. First game in Vegas in front of fans. And my word for this is upset. I have Vegas winning this game. And I had it before the injuries, and I'll tell you why. I think playing this game in front of fans, first game ever in Vegas in front of a crowd is going to be a huge boost for this football team. Because it's going to be as loud as it's probably going to be all year in Allegiant Stadium. You've got a Raider team that looking to prove something. Their defense really didn't play much in the preseason. Their starters didn't really play that much in the preseason. And a Raven team that really we don't know how good their offense is. I mean, even before the Dobbins, after the Dobbins injury, when Gus Edwards was going to be the number one back, I'm like, their running game is okay. But can Lamar Jackson throw the ball down the field? Right now he's only got Mark Andrews, Marquise Brown, who's battling injuries this offseason, Sammy Watkins usually has great week ones, and Bateman, who's on IR to start the season, the short-term IR. So if you're the Ravens, can they go into Vegas trying to figure out any pieces of their offense right now and have any type of cohesion? While the Raiders, while they haven't played together this preseason, it's mostly the same guys that are back. Josh Jacobs in the backfield now with the new addition, Kenyon Drake. Ruggs, Bryan Edwards, Darren Waller. I think Waller's going to play big. Again, I'm going Vegas. I'm not going to Vegas, but I'm going to pick Vegas to win this game. Which would be bad news for Baltimore, because you also have to remember, short week, they play the Chiefs in week two. So Ravens could be looking at an 0-2 start if they lose this game. Now, that would not mean their season's in trouble, but wouldn't be the start that people like, especially people think Baltimore's going to win the AFC North. Which I actually do as well, but even without the injuries, but it would be interesting to see if Baltimore got off to a bad start, what actually happened. So there it is, word association for week number one. Now, we don't usually do Thursday games. Maybe on the next show that we do early next week, we'll do a quick one for Giants-Washington, which is a Thursday game. But usually we just recap the Thursday game and we'll briefly mention it. But usually it's going to be the Sunday games and the Monday game that gets featured in Word Association every week. So hope you all enjoyed that. I love doing it. I love putting the words together. And again, you have your word or phrase for your favorite team. RickJKeeler@gmail.com is how you contact me. So we'll take a break and come back and we'll look at college football. What are my 5 games to watch in week 2 of the season? And then we will give an in-depth preview of Iowa State coming up next on Kicking It with Keeler. Here on Full Press Radio. Heading from the NFL to college here on Kicking with Keeler as we look at the top games in college football this week. Before we do that, let's give a couple of news items related to college football. New AP poll came out this week. Georgia moves up to number 2, the only other team to get first place votes besides Alabama. Ohio State is 3rd, Oklahoma 4th, A&M is 5th. Clemson moves down to 6th. And then you got Cincinnati, Notre Dame, Iowa State, and Iowa. Iowa State and Iowa, of course, we'll get into how big their game is coming up. Coastal Carolina did move up to 17. I think that's a big boost. They went up 5 spots. North Carolina dropped from 10 to 24. So those are some big poll items. Also, UCLA moving up to 16th after they went over LSU. So the Bruins putting themselves in the conversation. And I was also very impressed with Matt Corral. Monday, Ole Miss took on Louisville. Matt Corral was throwing it over the yard. Their defense is making plays. So without Lane Kiffin, a very good win for Ole Miss and another bad loss for the ACC Monday night with Louisville. So here we go. My 5 games to watch in college football for week 2. And it's not a glamorous slate. It's not like the week 1 slate, but it's pretty close. I will go number 5. I will go to Provo for the Holy War. Utah, number 21 in the country with Charlie Brewer, the transfer from Baylor quarterback against BYU, who played very well against Arizona in Vegas that last week. BYU is going to have a kind of a little bit of rejuvenation from a program perspective. They, along with UCF and Cincinnati, are going to be heading to the Big 12 in a couple of years. So the Big 12 does expand. It doesn't contract. As we all thought it was going to be possible, BYU, Cincinnati, Houston, and UCF will be got approved by the Big 12. They will join, again, probably in the next couple of years. BYU will join in 2023-24, and Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlsby. So the other 3 programs will join in 2024. BYU can join earlier because they're independent, so that would make sense. But how does BYU kind of handle that excitement? Because I'm sure I know people kind of liked they were independent, but now they get more of a shot at maybe making a playoff down the road. So this game always, I think, is one of those hidden rivalries that you're going to enjoy. That's the game that will take place Saturday night at 7 o'clock Eastern. Actually, not 7 o'clock, 10:15. So it's not Pac-12 after dark, but involves a Pac-12 team. So that's 10:15 on ESPN. Utah right now favored by 7. My number 4 game is going to be Texas at Arkansas. That game at 7 o'clock on ESPN Saturday. Hudson Card played well in that first game for Texas against Louisiana. Arkansas kind of struggled with Rice, but a chance for Sam Pittman to get that signature win as Arkansas head coach. But Texas, can they follow up a good win with a good road win? So that, to me, is number 4. Number 3, I'm going to go a little bit different here, and I'm going to tell you why. And it relates to what we're going to talk about at the end of the show. 3:30 game on CBS, and due to being the 20 years since 9/11, Air Force will play Navy in Annapolis. CBS, I believe, is going to be in Annapolis as well for this game. It's going to be cool to see the two of the Armed Forces teams going at it. Different style of football. Air Force and Navy kind of gets that national attention, and it's always good to thank our armed forces and all those who protect us. And these are players that are going to be eventually protecting us in either the Air Force or the Naval Academy. So in honor of them, I'm going to put this game on the list. And this game actually tends to be pretty close. I mean, these two teams play that fun triple option style, a lot of running. If you like the offensive attack in terms of the ground game, you'll love this game. And just based on patriotism alone, I couldn't see not putting this game in the top 5. So Air Force and Navy to me is number 3. Number 2, I'm going to the Horseshoe. Noon Eastern, Oregon at Ohio State on Fox. And for both of these teams, I'm going to be interested to see, because Oregon with Anthony Brown at quarterback, they kind of struggled against Fresno State, needed a touchdown late in the fourth quarter to win that game. Did they look ahead? Was it because of the injury to Kayvon Thibodeau, who sounds like he's going to play? And they need him. He's their best pass rusher. He's most likely going to be a top 5 pick in next year's draft, if not the number 1 pick. And for an Ohio State team that really, I thought, benefited from poor Minnesota tackling in the second half. Every big play they made went for a touchdown with Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson. I mean, C.J. Stroud can make the plays down the field, but now he gets a little bit of a tougher defense in Oregon. And this is his first game in Columbus at home as the quarterback. How does that play a factor? Can Oregon go on the road with, essentially for their body clock, a 9 a.m. kick and respond? I mean, if Oregon can get a huge win on the road, it would help their playoff candidacy. Ohio State, after this game, they don't really play a team that's ranked until, I believe it's late October. Their next game against a ranked opponent, as of right now, is October 30th against Penn State at home. Now, they do have a game at Indiana before that, but Indiana got steamrolled by Iowa last week. So keep in mind at Ohio State here, Oregon is also, I think, in a pretty good position themselves. If Oregon were, again, to win this game, their next ranked opponent isn't until October 23rd at UCLA. Now, they have Arizona at Stanford before that. They got Cal at home on a Friday. But Oregon, a win here would really help the Pac-12. Pac-12 didn't have as bad of a weekend as the ACC last week, but they nearly did. I mean, you think about Washington losing to Montana, and that's why the Washington at Michigan game is not on here. Washington State losing to Utah State. Pac-12 did not hold the tone either. And Stanford getting steamrolled by Kansas State. So Oregon needs a win here to help the Pac-12. That's why it's number 2. And number 1, I think it's pretty obvious, and we're going to break down the game in a little bit. Iowa State, 4:30 on ABC in Ames, the Cy-Hawk rivalry, which I wanted to get a better insight in the Cy-Hawk rivalry, which is why it's on Student Section Showdown this week. Iowa coming off the blowout win over Indiana. Iowa State had to squeak by Northern Iowa. It wasn't a pretty game last week. Both these teams, a win would do wonders to their playoff chances. Iowa State would get a huge non-conference win. Iowa would have 2 wins against top 20 opponents at the time. And Iowa's Big Ten schedule does not have Ohio State on it, does not have Michigan on it. They get Penn State at home. Their only tough road game in the conference is at Wisconsin. So Iowa with a win here, you might be talking about them as a big playoff contender come November. I mean, that's It's not quite Georgia-Clemson, but this game is big. Now, other games I would thought about on the list, honorable mentions, if you will. I'll put Washington against Michigan on there. How does Washington respond? Cade McNamara, can Michigan get to 2-0? That would be interesting if they were to get a win here. Texas A&M at Colorado. A&M going on the road. Colorado got a win last week. A&M's favored by 17, but see if the Buffs maybe can do something to surprise them in Denver a little bit. No, Purdue and UConn's not on the list, even though Randy Edsall got fired from UConn after losing Holy Cross last week. Florida at UCF, USF, although USF got dominated by NC State last week. That's the 1 o'clock game on ABC. And I think my sixth game this week is Pitt at Tennessee. That's the noon game on ESPN after College Game Day. And for Pitt, they have an experienced quarterback in Kenny Pickett. Pat Narduzzi usually brings good defense to the field. And Tennessee, good win against Bowling Green, but now Joe Milton gets to face an ACC school. And if the ACC wants to have some respect level after last week's debacle, Pitt going to Knoxville and winning, albeit Tennessee's not exactly what it once was, would be a big win for the conference. So Pitt-Tennessee would be right there as well. So next week on the show, around this time, I'm looking at potential week three options. Because again, we try to do student section showdown every week. And some games that we're going to consider for that, definitely Alabama at Florida. I mean, that's going to be a game on the list for sure. Another one would probably be Auburn at Penn State could be a good student section showdown game. Maybe Arizona State at BYU. There are some fun games to look at next week. And Cincinnati at Indiana would be there. Indiana had the tough loss. Maybe they kind of took it out of the conversation, but it would be a big win if Cincinnati would get it. That's your look at week three. We'll break it down a little bit more next week, especially after on Monday or Tuesday, we'll recap week two in college football. So coming up next, to look more at Iowa and Iowa State, I was joined by Austin Hansen, sports editor for the Iowa student newspaper, The Daily Iowan. We were supposed to have Austin on during the NCAA tournament. It did not work out. Iowa's run ended early, and there was a lot of teams we had on from Iowa's region. We didn't want to bring on multiple schools from the same region if we can avoid it. So we're glad to get Austin on this time around to talk college football. He provides some great insight. We talk about the game. We talk about covering games at Kinnick Stadium. What's it like to cover Kirk Ferentz? And what does the Cy-Hawk rivalry actually mean for people like me who are in the Northeast and don't really get the whole landscape of what that rivalry is. So we got into that a little bit more. We will come back and we will wrap up the show, giving some brief news items, but mainly we're going to focus on what Saturday actually means. And we're definitely going to dive into that a little bit more and what Saturday could bring from a sports and life perspective. So stay tuned for my interview with Austin. We will wrap up the show on the other side. After this short break. One of the teams that made a big statement in the opening weekend of college football are the Iowa Hawkeyes. Moved up to number 10 in the country, blew out Indiana, and now they stay in state to take on number 9 Iowa State. That's the big national game. Game day is in Iowa State this week, 4:30 Eastern on ABC. And join me to help preview the game and maybe talk a little bit about what the rivalry means for some of us that are in the Northeast and don't really get the full scope of it. He's the student sports editor for the Daily Iowan. Joining us on Student Section Showdown this week is Austin Hansen. Austin, how are you today?
I'm doing great. It's been a busy week with football stuff, and you can tell that there's going to be a lot of energy this Saturday. Just looking at Twitter and even here in Iowa City, seeing signs in windows and everywhere else, basically.
So before we get into Iowa's week one blowout of Indiana, as I just mentioned, tell listeners out there that maybe aren't as familiar with the Cy-Hawk rivalry what its importance is in the state of Iowa.
So it's interesting. I don't want to say it means everything, but it kind of does. To some people here in Iowa, it means everything to them. If the Hawkeyes don't beat the Cyclones, their whole entire year and the entire football season is ruined. But there are also some people here that are like, well, really, if you look at it, Iowa's bigger games are Wisconsin or other Big Ten opponents that they'll see during the conference season that, will dictate whether or not they win the Big Ten West. And go to the Big Ten Championship and things like that. But there's no doubt about it that people out here from Ames, from Iowa City, West versus East Iowa, they don't like each other. Both teams want to win, and there have been no punches pulled so far this week, even between the two teams so far. So it means a lot to the state, and Athletic Director Gary Barta at Iowa here and Head Coach Kirk Ferentz here at Iowa both said that this game is good for the state and good for college football.
Now, I don't think anybody's surprised that Iowa necessarily beat Indiana, but I think the whole country was shocked with the way they blew out Indiana. What did you take away the most from a 28-point victory in the Big Ten?
I think the number one thing you have to look at is Iowa's defense. We knew they had an experienced secondary coming in. Everyone's a junior or older. A couple of these guys have been here for 4 or 5 years even. So that's the number one takeaway. And the defensive line particularly had 6 quarterback hurries, and they rotated like eight guys in and out of the lineup all afternoon. So to get 6 quarterback hurries and a sack is pretty impressive. And obviously Iowa's offense had the Tyler Goodson touchdown and Spencer Petras quarterback draw for a touchdown. But like the defense is the big story, right? 14 points on 2 pick sixes from Riley Moss. He then wins defensive player of the week nationally and in the Big Ten conference. So the big takeaway is Iowa's defense seems to be legit this year, especially against an Indiana offense with a quarterback like Michael Penix Jr. that looked legit, at least when he was in there last year.
Yeah, so those who just got their first information about Riley Moss, I mean, how good of a player is he and how impactful can he be this week against another good quarterback in college football in Brock Purdy?
You know, I don't think anyone was super well acquainted with Riley Moss before this weekend. I mean, I think he has 8 interceptions on his Iowa career now, which puts him at 3rd all-time in Iowa history. His 3 pick sixes in his career is good for a tie for the program record in that category. So he's definitely an impact player, not somebody that I'd consider to be a ball hawk, but, you know, he's proven time and again that, you know, he can play. He's just from Ankeny, Iowa, about 1.5 to 2 hours from here, and, you know, Iowa guy, so he certainly wasn't highly recruited or anything like that, but he certainly made his presence felt on this defense. And I think after last week, offenses probably won't be apt to throw his way, but then you have to throw towards Matt Hankins and Kayvon Merriweather and all these other guys that Iowa has that have been known to, you know, intercept the ball at times pretty frequently as well.
We've broken down this game a lot this week. I saw you even talk to Iowa State's student sports editor, which is really cool, on a podcast. So give us a couple keys to how Iowa can pull off this road victory.
So there's a couple of things that you want to look at. And number one, Spencer Petras was Iowa's biggest liability last year. He's their quarterback. And he has to be solid against the Cyclones. Cyclones run a 3-3-5 defense. 3 down linemen, 3 linebackers, 5 defensive backs. He said at media availability on Tuesday that that's not something Iowa really runs into a lot in the Big Ten. A lot of teams in the league run 4-3 or, you know, 3-4 defenses. So he'll have to prepare for that. And if he can play adequately, Iowa will have a good chance to win the game. And then obviously defensively you have to slow Breece Hall down. Iowa State's, I guess he finished 6th in the Heisman voting last year. So racked up about 1,600 yards rushing. So if Iowa can manage, I don't know, 20 to 25 points on offense and slow down Breece Hall, they can win in a smash-mouth game. But I don't think Iowa can win in a high-scoring game where, you know, Brock Purdy, Iowa State's quarterback, and Charlie Cole are their tight end, get going and score a bunch of points, because I don't know if Iowa's offense with Spencer Petras right now is capable of that. Granted, Tyler Goodson, their running back at Iowa, is a solid option, and Sam Laporta at tight end is good too. But Iowa has to be, I would say, very solid on defense, because I don't think they'll score more than 30 points on Saturday.
It just feels like, though, Iowa is catching Iowa State at the right time. I mean, for the second straight year, Iowa State, albeit they didn't lose compared to last year, but they disappointed in only beating Northern Iowa 16-10. Northern Iowa's a good FCS program, but for those of us, including myself, that picked Iowa State to win the Big 12, I'm kind of starting to maybe lose my sense of optimism that they could do that. I know it's one game, but is Iowa getting Iowa State at the right time?
It certainly seems like it. There's a lot of momentum on Iowa's side. You know, not everyone was expecting them to blow out Indiana like they were. And you and I has always given Iowa State a tough game. I know 2 years ago they played into triple overtime before Iowa State eventually beat them. And Iowa State didn't have their tight end, Charlie Kolar, last week. And that kind of made their offense look stagnant at times because you could just tell they didn't have that legitimate option to pass to. So I think Iowa is getting Iowa State as good a time there is to get them. You certainly wouldn't want them when they're gearing up to play Oklahoma or something like that, because that offense is going to be humming and their defense is going to be ready to go too. But I think this is as good a time to catch the Cyclones, though. I wouldn't read too much into a 16-10 loss to UNI, because UNI is solid and their quarterback, Will McIlvaine, is legit.
So we look at this game. Yes, it's only week two, but we talked about how big of a playoff picture game Georgia-Clemson was last week. So what is the winner of this game? Whoever wins this game, what does it do to their playoff chances?
I think it makes the winner of this game probably a bubble playoff team, for sure. For Iowa in particular, this could really propel them to heights they haven't seen since 2015 when they went 12-0 and went to the Big Ten championship game. Because after this week, Iowa's schedule kind of isn't as hard, I guess you could say, because they have Kent State, Colorado State. Then you're looking at like Minnesota, Purdue, Illinois, Nebraska, with a tough game mixed in against Wisconsin in there and a tough game against Penn State. But other than that, after next week, the Hawkeyes' schedule is pretty manageable. But whatever team wins this game, they'll probably move close to the top five, so they'll be on the bubble. And that's unfamiliar territory for both of these teams. Everyone's talked about Iowa State as a dark horse playoff contender for it seems like the last 3 years. They've never quite been able to do it. And Iowa's one of those teams that'll hover around 8-4, 10-2 every year. And then, you know, every 4 or 5 years, and I guess we're on 6 years now since 2015, they'll pop and they'll, you know, make a run at the playoff or make the Rose Bowl or something like that. So maybe this is that year for Iowa, or maybe it's that year for Iowa State. But I think putting a win like this on your resume does a lot for college football playoffs, but perhaps not for the team's, you know, more immediate goals like winning a conference championship.
Especially if you look at it from Iowa's perspective, no Ohio State on the schedule, no Michigan on the schedule, and this is their last true big road test until Halloween weekend at Wisconsin. And we saw Wisconsin, well, Penn State and Wisconsin set the sport back about 30 years with the first half, but Penn State did win that game. So, I mean, Iowa's got a really advantageous schedule in terms of not really having to go to many hostile environments, although you could argue, I guess, Evanston could be, because weird things happen at Northwestern, but the road map after this week in terms of road slate, very good for Iowa.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, I'm sure they'll play at 11 a.m. at Ryan Field. That seems like the tradition. They'll be on ESPN2. it will cure anyone's insomnia out there. I'm sure it'll probably be like 17 to 10 or something like that. They'll play in classic fashion. So that'll be a test. And Nebraska always tests Iowa just because those two teams hate each other so much, which is surprising because they weren't even in the same conference for a long time. But yeah, I think that the roadmap from here for Iowa, especially over the next 3 to 4 weeks, is relatively straightforward. But yeah, there's a couple teams. Minnesota might scare them a little bit after they only lost to Ohio State by 14 last week. They look a lot better, but obviously they won't have Muhammad Ibrahim either. So there's some tests left on Iowa's schedule, but I don't know if there's any games right now after this one that you would say they would not be the favorite or a single-digit underdog in.
So for those, again, we talked about how the rivalry is viewed in Iowa. So I'll ask you, as somebody who covers these games and someone who's never been to Kinnick Stadium, and we always hear how Kinnick Stadium is such a great home atmosphere, what do you like the most about it?
So I think the main thing with Kinnick Stadium, you can feel the history when you walk in, right? Like, it's brick. You can see where the old windows were. But the main thing is its construction puts the fans right on top of the sidelines. Like if you go to bigger NFL stadiums and stuff, there's, you know, I'd say probably 10, 15 yards between the fans and the, even the back benches. But like in Iowa, if you're a player sitting on the back bench, people can reach out and touch you on your helmet. You know, the fans are right on top of you. It's loud. It's designed to trap all the noise in the stadium. And, you know, obviously there's the wave at the end of the first quarter that people really love out here. But I think it's the fans out here, right? There's no professional sports other than minor league baseball here in Iowa. So, like, a Hawkeye football game on a Saturday is the attraction. It's all people care about, it seems like, sometimes. Like, NFL football is big, but in Iowa, college football is king. So the fans know a lot. They're passionate. And they're always right on top of you at Kinnick Stadium. So it's really hard for teams to come in there and win games, I think, for that reason. Like Indiana on Saturday, they haven't played at Kinnick Stadium in a long time. And I felt like at times they just were not prepared for what they thought that was going to be. Because it's unique. I mean, when Penn State's student-athletes say that Iowa is the toughest place to play, that's a real testament to Iowa because they play at Beaver Stadium, and that sets the bar pretty high.
You consider also the Horseshoe, the Big House, and now you're throwing Iowa tougher than those two places. You know it's a tough place to play. What is it like covering Kirk Ferentz, a guy who has basically been synonymous with Iowa ever since he's been there?
You know, it's interesting. At his press conferences on Tuesdays and after games, we kind of call him Kirk's Talks around here because He really likes to talk or give you a whimsical tidbit. But you can also tell that he's got a lot of experience. And he's been through a lot here. Obviously last summer, there was the racism things going on in the program. And he's been through a lot. But you can tell that, he's got a lot of experience and that he's willing to listen to his players. And I think to a certain extent, he is a player's coach. His guys seem to love him, and, you know, he's an emotional guy. He doesn't always show it, especially when he's up on, like, a national podium for, like, a bowl game or a Big Ten football media days. But, you know, on a regular Tuesday when he's just chopping it up with the and talking to the Iowa reporters, he's a lot different. So it's fun to cover him, and, you know, maybe he's not the biggest personality like an Ed Orgeron or something, but I think he certainly has a lot of people's respect because he's been at it for so long.
So let's look at the conference from a bigger perspective. Outside of Iowa's blowout win over Indiana, what stood out the most to you in Big Ten play in week one?
Well, I think there's a couple things to look at. Number one is Minnesota only losing to Ohio State by 14. I think that showed that Ohio State's got some holes they need to fill, or like a quarterback, they'll have to make sure that C.J. Stroud is their guy. And they have so much explosive playmaking ability, but they haven't run into a defense like on Iowa or like, you know, maybe a Michigan. Maybe this year their defense will be all right, or Northwestern or whatever the defense is. They haven't ran into anything quite like that. So that's one big takeaway for me. And I guess thinking about last week, Nebraska picking up the big win over Fordham after they lost to Illinois. Had that one been close, you might have been talking about a midseason coaching change in Nebraska. And that might still be in the cards. I don't know, but those are just a couple big takeaways that you could look at, from the Big Ten last week.
Yeah, I was going to comment when you said the tough game at Nebraska. I was like, that game's only going to be tough if Nebraska's got a new head coach at the end of the season and playing for their new coach. I mean, that might be the only way that game is competitive at all, but it is a rivalry, so you have to respect it. I'm interested in the Big Ten this week at Ohio State because I feel like as good as Minnesota was in that game, it seemed like every big play Ohio State had went for a touchdown. Like if they caught the ball, Minnesota was not going to tackle them. That's how bad the second half was defensively. I wonder if CJ was that. I don't know if that's more CJ Stroud doing because Minnesota's defense was that bad or this offense is that good. And that's why I'm interested in this Oregon game, because if Thibodeau doesn't play, if Thibodeau doesn't play or is limited, do we really still figure out how good Ohio State is, or is it just the competition they're playing. I'm intrigued to see what CJ Stroud does this week.
I think it's interesting. I don't know if Ohio State and CJ Stroud play well. I don't know if that means that they're legit or not, because I don't know if I believe in Oregon's defense. Once they get into Big Ten play this season and they start having to play some legit defenses like, you know, Penn State, or if they run into Iowa in the Big Ten championship game, or Wisconsin, or whatever, one of these teams that has a good defense, that's, I think, when they'll really be tested. Because as much as I think the Pac-12 is renowned for defense, and Oregon has, you know, gotten better defensively, obviously, since the Chip Kelly era over the last, you know, 5-10 years, but I don't know. I don't think Ohio State will truly be tested until they play a Big Ten defense. And we'll see how CJ Stroud handles a Big Ten game on the road. Obviously, Minnesota's one thing on a Thursday night, but it's totally different to go to Michigan on a Saturday or Wisconsin on a Saturday.
Last one for you, Austin. Opener last year compared to opener this year. How can you compare it in terms of not being able to cover the team? It's been, I'm guessing, a more normal experience last week than last year was.
Yeah, last year I didn't even get to go to the Purdue game. We were limited to one credential per outlet, so I didn't even go to Iowa's first game. I actually covered it from my apartment here in Iowa City on Zoom and wrote about the game that way. So it's night and day for sure. I mean, this weekend we're sending three reporters to Ames, so for us it's totally different. Having fans is a new experience, and that's fun. You know, we love that. We get to go do in-person press conferences, which is fun. You know, as cheesy as it sounds, walking through Kinnick Stadium and, you know, going on the field and walking back to the locker room for player interviews and the press conference room. That's fun. That's exciting. You know, it's definitely more exciting than opening your laptop up and, you know, I guess listening to what is said for an hour. You can raise your hand and ask a question, but at times it felt like you were just kind of disconnected. So I feel like player interviews are a lot better now. And I think the experience of covering the team is a lot more personal, and you just feel like you have a better beat on what's going on in and out of the locker room and on the field.
So tell listeners out there about the Daily Iowan, the coverage you guys, how you mentioned having three reporters at the game this weekend, and how they can follow you and the coverage of the game this week on Twitter.
So there's a couple ways. We have a Twitter account. It's called Daily Iowan Pregame. So every week we release a standalone tabloid or magazine type edition that's just, you know, 12 to 16 pages usually of football. So we have an account called @DIPregame. We'll tweet out photo, video, updates. Obviously, dailyiowan.com. We'll have a live blog available during the game. We'll have a couple other things available. We'll have tons of post-game stories, I'm sure. We'll have stories right after Saturday. We'll have stories on Sunday, Monday, and probably even a little bit on Tuesday. And obviously, this Thursday, so I guess today is Thursday, so tomorrow, Friday, we'll release, gosh, I'd say probably a preview packet of like 10 stories or so. We've got a one-on-one with Iowa's fullback Monty Potterbaum. We've got a cover story on the history of the Cy-Hawk game. We've got a breakdown of the marquee matchups. We've got an Around the Big Ten segment where we power rank the Big Ten teams and preview all the matchups. So tons of stuff from us. The easiest way to follow us is @DIPregame on Twitter or @DailyIowa.com.
Be sure to check out all that coverage. A lot of good stuff and a little bit of inside podcasting. Austin was supposed to hop on, but Iowa's basketball team didn't want to help him out during the NCAA tournament. So glad he was on to hop on and talk about some football and give us some insight on the Cy-Hawk rivalry this week. Austin, enjoy the game this week, and who knows, maybe we'll talk again down the road if Iowa's competing for a playoff spot. Thanks for taking the time today.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate you having me on.
Thanks to Austin Hansen from the Daily Iowan for hopping on the show, giving us some insight in Iowa State. I'm really looking forward to that game Saturday afternoon, 4:30 Eastern on ABC. Reese Davis, Kirk Herbstreit, Holly Rowe on the call. for that game. It should be a lot of fun. Very quickly, some brief news items just came across in the last half hour as I recorded this. Jeff Passan from ESPN reported Trevor Bauer will not be eligible for the rest of the season and the postseason. He's still on administrative leave after the allegations of sexual assault that he's undergoing. The Dodgers will be fine. It's still no complete resolution, but at least baseball continuing to extend Trevor Bauer's leave and will not pitch the rest of the season. The question is, will he be a Dodger after this season? I think we'll find out. That story is far from over. On the tennis side, a really fun final tomorrow afternoon in Queens. It's a battle of unseeded teenagers. Layla Fernandez from Canada continuing her run. She upset Naomi Osaka in the third round, then beat Angie Kerber in round four, beat Elena Spitalina in the quarterfinals, and then beat Aryna Sabalenka, the number two player in the world, in the semifinals on Thursday. So it is Layla Fernandez from Canada against Emma Raducanu from Great Britain. She went from the qualifiers to the semifinals. She beat Maria Sakkari from Greece. So, battle of two unseeded teenagers. And it's only happened three times, or two other times. This is the third time it's happened in the sport. The other two times, one was Martina Hingis against Serena Williams, I believe was one of them. And that was the first all-teen final since 1999. 17-year-old Serena Williams beat 18-year-old Martina Hingis. That is Ben Rothenberg from the New York Times had that note. And these two actually met in the second round of Wimbledon Juniors. This is Rothenberg had in 2018. Raducanu beat Fernandez 6-2, 6-4. Raducanu has been dominant in this tournament. She has not lost a set. I mean, that's how dominant she has been as a qualifier, as you mentioned. That's what makes this a lot of fun, and really what it's a different tournament. Obviously, the favorites are out, but that will be something to watch Saturday. Semifinals are later today for the men. Felix Auger-Aliassime for Canada against Daniil Medvedev. We'll see what happens in terms of that match. I think Aliassime could provide some entertainment, but Medvedev should win. And then Novak Djokovic against Alexander Zverev. Both these guys met in the Tokyo semifinals, the Olympics. Zverev actually beat him in a best of three, but best of five, I don't know how you beat Djokovic, who's just two wins away from the calendar slam. So that should be fun. Finals of that are on Sunday. And we'll do more of a baseball breakdown next week. We'll take a closer look at the pennant races and things of that. We like to do that once a week here on the show, so we're not going to go deep into it this week. Instead, I want to touch on one game in particular, and I mentioned it on the show last week, or earlier this week, I should say. Last show was Monday. Saturday night, 7:40 Eastern on Fox. The national game on Fox. Normally, you don't see a lot of national games for Fox. Usually, it's regional around this time. I believe this is a standalone game. And it's at Citi Field. The Yankees at the Mets. Subway Series, second game of three-game set. And this game is big for both these teams in terms of playoff position. Yankees have lost six in a row going into Friday. Mets lost two of three in Miami. They're fading as well in the NL East, even though Atlanta and Philly kept giving them opportunities. But it's not about that. And I don't think Saturday's game is going to resonate from an on-field moment much past this. It is, again, as I mentioned, Saturday is 20 years since 9/11, when there were terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and then the plane crashing in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. It's a moment that we always tend to reflect, as we should. It's a moment where our thoughts and our prayers continue with those affected by those attacks and those that are suffering from 9/11 related illnesses. I mean, I was listening to Linda Cohn last night. She was doing she was on the ringside for the FDNY NYPD charity hockey game. And she mentioned there was a study, I think more people have died from the illnesses than the actual attacks. Which is jaw-dropping when you hear that. And I think back, because again, maybe I'm not the best one to talk about it, because I was 8 years old when that happened. I don't have the same perspective on it as those of you out there who were older than me when this happened, who were probably affected by it more than myself. But when I think about it and watch so many specials, and I think about it as a way of, I felt that, and I was watching, there was a good podcast, Trey Wingo, his Half Forgotten History podcast. He had on Bob Lee this week. Both of them used to work at ESPN. Both Trey Wingo and Bob Lee hosted the Sports Center. There was only one 7 o'clock Eastern Sports Center the day of September 11th, 2001. And they talked about what went about that show and how they went about hosting that show. And they were talking about the last time it really felt like we as a country were together for helping each other. And that's why I kind of tend to focus on it. And I'm going to admit, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens before the game Saturday night in New York. I think the Mets are most, from a sports perspective, connected, because they were the first game in New York at home since that tragic attack. And the Mets, obviously, if you've seen the MLB Network documentary, which aired Thursday night with Al Leiter, John Franco, Steve Carce, Davey Martinez, Jason Marquis, Mark DeRosa, it was fantastic. The Mets played the Braves, and Mike Piazza had the iconic two-run homer in the bottom of the eighth to lift the Mets and the city to a win. And it's the one game you listen to those Braves players in that documentary, and they're like, you know what? They needed it more than we did. And you never get moments like that. You get athletes that, like, always want to win, and I'm no doubt they wanted to win, I'm sure, but it's a game they didn't mind losing to help the people of New York and the people of the country heal for a short time. And the Yankees, I think, are also connected, because the Yankees got to the World Series that year, and there were people that were never Yankee fans. They were cheering for New York. The last time I remember that, at least in recent years, was the underdog team in 2017 that made the ALCS, a bunch of young kids. This was a 2001 team that had won three straight World Series and was trying to win a fourth in a row against an upstart Diamondback team. And people that weren't Yankee fans were rooting for the Yankees to win. They didn't win and get lost in Game 7, but those moments in New York where George Bush is throwing out the first pitch before Game 3, the miracle wins the Yankees had in Games 4 and Game 5, and you thought it was going to be something special. And it was special. So what does Saturday night look like? You have Bobby Valentine throwing out the first pitch to Joe Torre, which I think should be a really good scene. You see all these Met players 2001 still going to the different fire departments and going to see our first responders, who we owe a huge debt of gratitude to, both in this time with COVID and during that time as well, and every day. Think about all the firemen and police officers and emergency officials that lost their lives trying to save people. I mean, that alone is something we should commemorate. And what's going to be cool is the Mets are going to wear the caps of first responder organizations Saturday night. They're going to wear FDNY, NYPD, Port Authority, Police Department, Department of Sanitation, and Department of Corrections. And that is always, when the Mets are able to do that, you love when baseball lets them do that. And I said, baseball got this right. When they made the schedule a year ago, this had to be the game. Because while Met and Yankee fans might not like each other sometimes, it's a moment where everybody can gather together and can reflect and share a moment of, it's going to be a sad moment, of course, as it should be. But for a brief time, they can unite together. again, I don't have the same experience as you do. Tough for me to talk about the subject. But it's a subject we had to bring up to wrap up the show this week. So again, for me personally, and I know I'm sure all of us here at the network, our thoughts and our prayers, everybody's still affected by the attacks from 9/11. As I said earlier, again, I'm really interested to see that game Saturday because I do think it will resonate. It'll go into, I think, what we remember that first game back after 9/11 with the Braves and the Mets will be. It'll be that kind of game, maybe not from a on-field perspective, but from an off-field where were you perspective. I tried to get tickets to this game, and it cost you an arm and a leg to go. And I want to go to this game just to experience the atmosphere of it. But it's going to be different. They played on Friday night. That game will be fun. It'll be a lot of competitiveness, I'm sure. But Saturday will be different. And it's a good thing. It's a good thing it'll be different because for a little while, we'll have at least baseball to distract us, as we did back then. Sports is always a good way to... as I saw Jason Marquis, who was from Staten Island and pitched for the Braves that night, September 21st, 2001. Sports can put a Band-Aid on a wound that the whole country was feeling. Where you might be wondering back then, it was like wondering where if you could find your love, if their loved ones would be found again. And for a brief moment, they could watch the game and experience some form of joy that they were not expected. This whole country, particularly here in New York, and I'm sure in D.C. and in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, were not experiencing much of. So I want to talk about that a little bit this week. And again, as somebody who lives in New York, I have not been to the 9/11 Museum. I'd love to go. I'm eventually going to go to it because I want to continue to look into it a little bit more. But I wanted to at least spend some time talking about this week on the show. Be sure to follow me on Twitter, @Rickinator555. Follow us on Twitter at @FP_coverage, @FullPressRadio. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, wherever your podcast. Just search Kicking with Keyword. Chances are you will find it. Be sure to download the Full Press Coverage app on your iOS or Android device. It's free. Get all of our articles, podcasts, everything of that nature is there, so be sure to check that out. You can email me, rickjkeeler@gmail.com. If you want to send in your word association thoughts, your feedback on the show, we'd appreciate it. And what I find interesting is also you can check out my work at Barrett Sports Media. Did a couple articles this week. One was about Joel Klatt talking about the atmosphere of being at Jump Around for Penn State Wisconsin last week, and then Ryan Russell gave some comments on Skip Bayless on the show on a Cinephile with Adnan Virk. So check those out. Pinch eye prospects from the backfield to the Bronx. You can check that out. We just did a podcast, myself and Matt Cardos, who you will hear on the show at some point during the baseball playoffs. We talked about how you balance developing versus minor league playoffs, so be sure to check that out as well. Thank you to all those who tuned in this week, and continue to keep everybody affected by 9/11 in your thoughts, not just Saturday, but in general. Thank you for supporting the show. We'll be back Monday or Tuesday. We'll be back Tuesday, probably to Tuesday night, I would say, to talk about the week that was in the NFL. Enjoy your football this weekend. Enjoy the baseball. Thanks for kicking with me, Ricky Keeler, and I will see you next time.